my kasavar. Okay, one mem gimel amid beis, page 86 or 43b1. Okay, the Gemara was discussing before if a shliach can become a witness or not. Right, if a shliach gives kedushin to a woman, can he be able to testify? Or if a shliach was sent to pay back a debt, can he testify on it? So Rav Nachman said before in the Gemara that by monetary laws, by divorce, and by marriages, the shliach could be the witness. Okay, he could be a witness. So the Gemara is asking, by monetary laws, how does it work? Microsoft, what does he hold? He could have, again, this Gemara we learned already, but just with the few lines we need to go back because we're in the middle. What does he hold? He says like this. There's a law. If I lend you money in front of witnesses, okay, so we learned last time, there's an argument in the Gemara, do you have to pay back with witnesses or not? Okay? I lent you $1,000 in front of two witnesses, do you need to pay it back in front of two witnesses? Right? That's what, and there's an argument. Some say yes, some say no. So he says like this, what does Rav Nachman hold? If he holds that if you lend somebody money, you have to pay back in front of witnesses, Hani negem be'edus ninu. These agents that say they paid the debt for the lender the borrower is paying back the money to the lender, right? And many times the borrower gives him the money in front of two witnesses that make sure that he shouldn't say later, I didn't give you the money. If that's the case, these shluchim are negem be'edus ninu. They're being partial in the testimony. Why? The amre le padenu, if they said we didn't pay the guy, we didn't give the lender the money that you told us to give him, so then the borrower will say to them, hey, pay me back the money I gave you. Right? So, for sure they have to say that they gave him the money, because now they're going to be liable for the money. Right? The borrower sends the shliach to pay back the lender. So of course he's going to say we gave you back the money to the lender, because not the borrower is going to say, so where's the money I gave you? And they can't say we gave it back to you, to the borrower, because if you gave it to him in front of two witnesses, they're going to need two witnesses to pay it back, and they don't have that. So of course they're going to say that we lent it to him. So therefore we must say, La'elam kosava, therefore Rav Nachman must hold, Hamalvez chaveira be'edim, if you lend somebody money with witnesses, ain't tzarech lefora be'edim. They don't have to pay it back with witnesses. Therefore, in this case, the shluchim can testify. Because they can say we gave it to him, they can say we gave it to him. It doesn't matter. They're not going to be out anyway of the money. Now there's a din. A witness who is biased cannot testify. Okay? Because then he obviously is biased. Right? He can't be partial. You have to be impartial. Right? So the Gemara's question was, 1 minute. The borrower who's sending the money back to the lender with the shliach, how can they be witnesses? Right? They're going to have to say we give it back to the lender, because otherwise the borrower will say, I gave you the money in front of two witnesses, where's the money back? Did you pay it, give it to me in front? No. So therefore, the Gemara says, we must say Rav Nachman holds, he doesn't have to pay back with witnesses. Even if I lend you money in front of witnesses, I don't have to pay it back in front of witnesses. Therefore, in this case, the shluchim can have one of two options. Either they can say to the lender, we gave it to you, or to the borrower, they can say, we gave it back. And they don't need witnesses to prove it. So therefore, there wouldn't be what's called negeya, they wouldn't be partial. So therefore, they would be able to testify. But now the Gemara says like this, Vahash, that the Tikkun Rabban and Shvua says is, now that the Chachamim instituted what's called a Heses Shvua. What is a Heses Shvua like this? I have to explain this concept. It's a very important concept in many places in Gemara. There's what's called biblical oaths. And they're rabbinic oaths. Okay? The Gemara says, what's the difference between biblical oaths and rabbinic oaths? Biblical oaths, they scare the daylights out of you. They darkened the room and they made it spooky. And before the person swore in a biblical oath, They said to him, do you know what happened when the God said, do not say my name in vain? The whole world shook, and you better watch it because you're going to be cursed. And who knows what if you swear falsely, because they used to swear with God's name, holding a Sefer Torah. I mean, it was real heavy-duty stuff. So there are three biblical oaths. That's it. The three biblical oaths are a person who's watching something for somebody, okay, and says it was stolen or lost. He swears that it was stolen or lost, and he's out of payment. Another one is Eid Echad, one witness. That means like this. If I lent you $1,000, okay, and I say, you owe me $1,000. You say, no, I don't. You say to me, no, I don't. I don't owe you a cent. Okay? And I bring witnesses that you owe me the money. You have to pay. Okay? If I don't bring witnesses, you don't have to pay. I have to prove it. There's a rule in Gemara, Motzi Mechaveir, if you want to extract money from your friend, the burden of proof is on me. Okay? I can't just come over to you and say, you owe me $1,000. I have to prove it. Right? What happens, though, if I say, you owe me $1,000, you deny it, and I produce one witness. I produce one witness that you do owe me the money. Now, only two witnesses can extract money. Okay, the Torah says you need two witnesses. What does one witness accomplish? That you have to swear.
The borrower?
Yeah, the defender. No, if I say you owe me $1,000, and you say no, and I produce one witness that you do, you have to swear that I don't owe you the money, and then you're believed. Even though there's one witness, you have to swear. If you can't swear, you don't want to swear, then you have to pay me the money.
That's a biblical swear.
That's a biblical oath. Then there's another biblical oath that's called Meidu B'Mixus. Meidu B'Mixus means, I say to you, you owe me $1,000, you say, no, I owe you $500. I'm saying, you owe me $1,000, you say to me, no, I owe you $500. So the Torah says you have to swear that you don't owe me more than the $500, and then you pay the $500. There's no witnesses, there's nobody. Me and you. You owe me $1,000, no, I owe you $500. You come to Bezdin, Bezdin says you have to swear. These are the three biblical oaths. But if I say to you, you owe me $1,000, and you deny it all, biblically there's no oath. Biblically, you're off the hook. That's it. The Chachamim, in this questionable taste, says whether it was in the days of Rav Nachman or earlier in the Mishnah or not, the Chachamim, though, made a rabbinic oath. It's called Shvuas Hesis. Why it's called Hesis for whatever reason. What does Hesis mean? What's the oath of a Shvuah? If I say you owe me $1,000 and you deny it completely and there's no witnesses, biblically you're off the hook, the Chachamim say you have to swear that you don't owe me the money.
Even though there's no one.
Correct. Because the Gemara makes an assumption. You just don't go over to somebody, you owe me money. You know, if you ask money, there's smoke over there. Okay? So granted, it's not a biblical oath. The guy has to swear what's called a rabbinic oath, called Shvuas Hesis, that I don't owe you the money. What? Yeah, but that's why. I can't extract the money, but the Chacham said we can make you swear. No. If you swear, I can't extract the money.
But if I don't swear...
Huh?
If I don't swear...
Bezdin will make you swear. I don't know if the din is... normally, I mean, the Mefarshim explained, normally a guy would rather, if he's lying, he wouldn't want to swear, he'd pay up the money. And if he's saying the truth, he'll swear. He doesn't care.
When do we use that?
No, the Chacham don't say you have to pay. Chacham say, though, you have to swear that you don't owe me the money. That's all.
In this case, we're not going to use that rule. He's not going to come with any proof. I claim something. But you come with something. So what is this rule?
No, but because it's a rabbinic oath, the guy is not afraid to swear if he's honest.
I understand that, but what about when this one applies?
He does have to bring a raya. He does have to prove it. He does. And therefore the Bezdin says you can't extract money. All we're telling, the rabbi said, he's not getting the money from you. All we want you to do is swear that you don't owe him the money. And if you're honest and you don't owe him the money, you'll swear that you don't owe him the money. And if you're a liar, the Chacham were hoping you'd admit your guilt rather than swear falsely, even though it's only a rabbinic oath.
If you're begging for proof, why have to swear?
No, if there's no proof. There's no proof. I come over to you in the street to say, you owe me $1,000.
I have to swear, Rabbi.
Yeah. Because the Chachamim said, we're afraid that the guy, the fact that the guy's asking you money, unless the Chachamim say like this, that's another din. If Bezin knows the guy's a liar and a swindler, then they're not going to make the guy swear. Okay? But you're talking about a normal, decent person. Comes over to somebody and say, you owe me $1,000. Okay? He's not going to come out of a clear blue if he's a decent human being. He's not going to come and say, you owe me the money. If he doesn't. Right? So, Chacham said, listen, you might have forgotten, you might have... We want just to play it safe. So it's not a biblical oath, it's a rabbinic oath. Okay? But you have to swear it. Well, the question is in the time of the Gemara, in the time of the Mishnah. It's a question in the codifiers when this initial Shavuot was instituted.
No, but he can just say it right there, or it has to be in front of...
No, it goes to Beis Din.
Oh,
yeah. No, by the way, this then, just to clarify another issue. If I come over to you now, in the street, they say, you know, you owe me $1,000, you say, fly a kite.
Right.
You don't have to swear. If I bring you to court, that's the case. It's only in Beis Din. I should mention this earlier. It's only in Beis Din. If I come with you and say, hey, you owe me $1,000,000, you go, you know, that's not called. Or not only that, if I say to you, you owe me $1,000, and you just, like, quiet, walk away, okay? That's not silence as admission. Okay, that means you couldn't care less what I said. But if I take it to court and I say you owe me $1,000 and you're silent in court, that's admission. You understand? There could be silence is admission. Silence could be I'm ignoring you. You're not even worth answering. Okay, so it depends. All these things. Yeah, not a guy. I come up to you in the street. Okay, you owe me $1,000. You have to swear. No, I take you to Beis Din and there's a whole thing going on. And Bezin's talking to you, you know, and the guy's owed me $1,000, you're denying it. So Bezin says, you know what? We want you to swear just to make sure. Okay? So now the Gemara says like this. Now that the Chachamim said that if you deny money, you have to swear. So in this case, if the Shliach can't just say they paid it back to the borrower, the money, because then the borrower would say, 1 minute, you have to swear in court. And the Edom don't want to swear. Right? So then they would rather say, I gave it to the lender. We're just saying now, in the Gemara, that if you hold, you don't have to pay back in front of witnesses, then they could say it to either one, because they can say, I gave the money to the lender, they can say, I gave back the money to the borrower. Right? But now that he would have to swear to the borrower, if the borrower says, give me back the money I gave you, and they say, what are you talking about? You never gave us money, they would have to swear. So then the shlich is partial. Because then he'd rather say, give it to the lender, because then he wouldn't have to swear for sure. So then the Gemara says, then he wouldn't be that case. That's what it says now. Now that the Chachamim instituted this called Shavuos Heses, Mishtaba ani Edom diavelei, the witnesses would have to swear that they gave it to him. So now the Gemara says, what's the bottom line of this din? Like, for instance, what's this case over here? Bottom line is, I gave you $1,000. You're sending back the shliach to pay me back the $1,000. Okay? The shliach says, I gave it to the lender. The lender says to the borrower, I never gave it to you. You never gave it to me. The borrower says, I paid him the money. Right? So what would be what would have to be?
Shliach cannot be a witness.
Oh, you're right. But what would be the din in this case? You're right. He couldn't be a witness because now he's partial.
So
right? 1 second. So now the question is, this is the case. I lent you $1,000. You give the shliach, him, the $1,000 to pay me back. I say I never got the money. You say, you gave him the money. He says, he gave me the money. I say, I never got it. Okay? So what do you do over here? So the din is like this. The witness swear that they gave it to the malva, to the lender. The lender swears he never got it. And the lender has to pay back, the borrower has to pay back the lender.
Who was the first guy? So the shulech swears that I never, I gave it to him. The shulech says, I swear that I gave it to him.
Right.
And the lender says, I never received it. I swear I never received it.
And then
now the borrower has to pay again.
Right.
Maybe not again. I need to pay.
Maybe. Well, he needs to pay. Maybe not again. But remember, that's the, at the bottom, he brings on the case of the shopkeeper with his ledger. We mentioned the case last time. Okay? I tell you, you're a storekeeper. You work for me. I tell the storekeeper, pay you.
Right?
Then you come to me and say, I never got the money. The storekeeper says, you got the money. So what do?
He's out $200.
You swear that you gave him the money. You swear you never got it. And I have to pay both of you.
The borrower doesn't have to swear?
Huh?
The borrower doesn't have to swear, only the malve and the sharia?
The borrower swears.
Yeah, he swears. The borrower swears.
No.
The borrower is not swearing.
The borrower is not swearing. What can he swear? He doesn't know.
All the problem is he's the only one who swears.
Can he swear that he gave it to the sharia? And the sharia will...
But the shliach swore he gave it to the lender.
Well,
and the lender swears he never got it.
Can the shliach say that he never received it from the borrower?
Oh, I know, because
that's not this case.
That's not the case.
Is initiating the case, but this is being initiated by you. That, so you don't need to swear. You're the one who's initiating, say, that I paid.
Right.
And therefore... You don't. If you're the one who initiate this thing, is that the right way to look at it? Because they're the ones who are in the middle that they have to swear. Therefore, it's not required that you swear as a borrower.
Yeah, but the problem is, the case over here is the borrower cannot swear because what's relevant over here? Did the lender get his money or not? Correct? That's the question over here. Did the lender get his money back? Now,
where is the money now?
No, but if the case over here is the lender is asking for his money. The shluchim are not asking for money. Okay? Just think about the situation again. The lender says, guys, all I know is I never got paid for my loan. The borrower doesn't know if the lender got the money or not. Because he doesn't know if the shliach kept the money or gave it or not. He doesn't know. You can't swear on it. What is he supposed to swear? I don't know. You can't swear, I don't know.
I gave it to shliach.
Yeah, but that does... The lender says, I don't care what you gave to the shliach.
I don't have it.
I still don't have it. Right. See, in this case, the borrower might be out double. But the shliach is not going to get any money from the borrower.
See, the borrower knows the truth, so he doesn't need to swear.
Everybody knows the truth, but they're all lying. Everybody knows the truth.
No, how would the borrower know the truth if the shliach never gave the money?
Yeah, but he'll know the truth if he gave the money. That he knows. But he won't know the truth if the shliach gave the money or not. And meanwhile, the lender says, hey guys, all I know is I didn't get the money. And the borrower can't swear you didn't get your money. He doesn't know that. What can he swear? I gave the shliach the money. The lender says, I don't care what you did. What does it have to do with me? I didn't get the money. You owe me. What are you running me around in circles? You gave him the money. So what does it have to do with me? I told you to send it to me. I mean, I didn't tell you to send him the money.
Yeah, but we can say, but you can swear that I gave it to you. You can swear.
Who's me?
You are the borrower.
No.
And you can swear...
That I gave what?
I gave the $100 to the shliach.
But the lender says, I don't care who you gave the money to. I never got my money. See, you have to understand. The lender the lender didn't make a shliach to go collect the money. See, it would be a different din if the lender sent a shliach to the borrower to get the money back. That's a different din. Because then it's his shliach. So as soon as the shliach gets the money, the lender got it. Right? Here that's not the case. The borrower is sending the shliach.
That's why I'm saying you're initiating this thing, that sending
the... I'm initiating the sending back the money. But the bottom line is the lender says, I never got the money you owe me and I want the money. And the borrower can't even swear. What could he swear? I didn't give you the money? How could he do it? It's a crazy case, but next time, you know, the guy should be more busy, more careful. Okay, next piece of Gemara. Middle of the page, two dots. In the Mishnah it says, Ha'ish Mekadosh is Bitei, a man is allowed to accept Kedushin for his daughter when she is a Naira, between 12 and 12 and a half. Okay? That's what the Mishnah said before. Okay, so the Gemara says, Tanan Hossam, we learned in another Mishnah like this. Naira Murasa, a girl that was betrothed but not married, he va'via mekablin is gita. She or her father can receive her get. Let me explain this like this. The din is, until a girl is 12, until bas mitzvah, she's called aktana, minor. She has no ability on her own to accept things, basically. A get she could accept, but as a rule, the father is the one that accepts it. A girl from 12 to 12 and a half is under the father's jurisdiction still, even though she's an adult. After 12 and a half, she becomes what's called a begeres, or a begeres. She's completely on her own. Okay. Now, a father can accept kedushin for his daughter, until she's 12 and a half. So what the Mishnah is talking about over here, a girl between 12 years old and 12 and a half, a father can accept her kedushin. Okay? But until she gets married, she's still under the father's jurisdiction. When she gets married, the father's out of the picture, now she's under the husband's jurisdiction. Okay? Which means like this. When a man does, nowadays we all do it under the chuppah, okay, but like we learned in Kesubis. Years ago, a man, and we learned in Kedushin also, a man gave a woman a ring, or I said that mekudeshously, okay? She became what's called Edison, Kedushin, which means she is forbidden for any other man in the world. But she's not married yet. 12 months later, they got married. That was the custom in the olden days. A woman had kedushin to tie her up that she cannot marry anybody else. She's an escrow. She can't marry anybody else. But she can't live with the man until she marries him, until there's a chuppah. Okay? Nowadays, we do both things together. Kedushin and nisuin, which is the second part of the marriage. That's why we read the ksuba in between the two halves of the wedding, to make a break between part A and part B. How do you make a separation between... So they read a ksuba, even though there's actually no purpose of reading a ksuba. It's just to break part A and part B. Years ago, there was 12 months between part A and part B. Today we do it all together. Okay? Now, once a woman does kedushin, and the husband doesn't want her anymore, even though it's not her husband yet, she needs a get. If she commits adultery, full-fledged adultery. Okay? Because she's designated for this man. The only thing she can't live with the guy yet because she's not married to him. But she's forbidden for the entire world. So let's say a girl, 12 years old, got married. Okay? Between 12 and 12 and a, not married, only kedushin. And between 12 and 12 and a half, the husband is divorcing her. Who can take her get? So Mishnah, our Mishnah said, the girl or the father. She could, because she's an adult, she's over 12. But for 12 to 12 and a half, she's still under the father's jurisdiction. So either her or her father can receive her get. That's what it said in the Mishnah. Okay? So the Gemara brings on a Brais, a Mishnah.
And after 12 and a half, she gets...
Only she can accept.
But this 12-month rabbi had nothing to do with the age. That just was the rule.
If a 10-year-old girl, the father accepted the Kedushim for his 10-year-old girl, 8-year-old girl, there be called rape. But in the olden times, fathers married off the girls under bat mitzvah.
12 months later,
they got married.
Whether he's 18 years old, 8 years old,
doesn't matter.
And when she's 12 and a half, can she say, "I don't want to be married to this guy"?
No. What you're talking about, that the Gemara is going to the Gemara is not going to talk about it. This is what's called mi'un. Meaning like this. I'll explain because it's relevant, not in this Gemara, but later on in the Gemara.
We learned something
about it. Yeah, we learned something about it. A father can accept Kedushin for his daughter. Over three. Any girl that's 3 years old and older, the father can accept her Kedushin.
She's a big girl.
Big girl. Rivka was 3 years old. Now, if they want to get out, she needs a full-fledged get. She's a 100% married woman. Then the din is like this. What happens if the father died and there's mother and brothers left? They can accept Kedushin for the daughter under Bas Mitzvah. But it's not a real Kedushin. Meaning, the day the girl reaches 12, she could say, "I don't want this guy." And she goes out free. If on the 12th birthday she still wants to stay married to him, then it becomes a biblical full-fledged Kedushin.
But she never lives with him.
Yeah, even if she lives with him. She can just say, "I don't want the guy." It's called Miyun. Miyun means refusal. She can refuse him. Why? Because the power of Kedushin of a minor, the Torah gives to a father only. Because the Torah says, "As biti nasati li'ishazeh," my daughter I gave to this man. So biblically, only a father can accept Kedushin for a minor, not the mother or the brothers. Okay, but the Chachamim didn't want girls running around, and who knows what would happen to them. So the Chachamim allowed the mother and the brothers to accept her Kedushin for her, but... by default, but the girl at the day she becomes Bar Mitzvah, she could say, "I don't want this guy," and she's out. With the father, she couldn't do that. Once the father marries at the age of three, she's stuck. She wants out, she needs to get. That's what the girl can do, like the refusal.
This is Kedushin and Nisuin? I mean, attention.
Even if it's Nisuin. Yeah.
So the brother or the mother will betroth her and marry her?
Yeah.
And at age 12, she say...
The day. Yeah. Once she lives that day and she wants to be married, she's married.
So, in the olden time, somebody just could go and say, "La, la, 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 you're married to me?" Or there was like... The father had to say yes.
The father had... No, they had needed two witnesses. You know, it had to be like proper Kedushin.
And of course...
But the father is believed to say... The father is believed to say, "I married off my daughter."
But what's the responsibility of the father at this point? I mean, how would you qualify a man that is it just I mean, halachically? I mean, is it
as long as the guy's Jewish? No, really, as long as the guy's Jewish, that's it.
That's why a lot of old men.
That's why the Gemara discusses. I mean, later on in Kedushin. What happens if the father on his deathbed has a younger daughter and he says, "I was Mekadosh my daughter to somebody," and he dies. And we don't know to whom. She's also for every man in the world. She can never get married. Because if the father accepted Kedushin from a man, she's a full-fledged married woman. So how can any man marry her?
So could that man come and swear?
No, that's a whole discussion. If the guy says, "It's me, do you believe him? Don't you believe him?" But technically, if a father on his deathbed said, I married off my daughter, and then to somebody, and he didn't say a name, and he dies, she can never marry. She's what's called a neguna for life.
Even nowadays.
It's pretty tough, huh?
They used to play dirty with that, by the way. A girl got married, and the father would say, no, I did kedushin for just to extract money. It was a whole... There's a lot of crooked people out there.
So the man that comes has to pay a lot of money.
Yeah.
Only up to 12.
Up to 12.
After 12.
No, 12 and a half also.
12 and a half.
Well, that's exactly what Isaac Kumar is talking about now. Is it by ghetto? Okay, let's see it inside. Tonight also we learned. Night Amid also a betrothed girl, okay? With the husband between 12 and 12 and a half. And the husband wants to divorce her. He va via mekabel nezgit. Either she or her father can receive her get. Okay? Amid Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda says, what are you talking about? Ein shtei yadayim zeiches kecha. Two hands cannot do it for one person. What do you mean? Her, or the father, it's not true. Now he says, Elo avia mekabel nezgit, only the father could do it. Why? Because if the father can marry her off, he's the only one that can accept the get, not her. So the first opinion says the girl or the father, and the Abuda says only the father. Then the Gemara says, V'chol sheini yachol lishmer zgita, any girl is unable to take care of her divorce, of her get, ein yachelu lizgadish, cannot become divorced. Okay? Meaning, a girl, if she's so young that she lacks understanding of what a get is, she'll think it's just a comic book, or another piece of paper, and she'll throw it out, or if somebody's, God forbid, mentally retarded, so then he can never divorce her. That means if you married a 3-year-old girl, you can't divorce her. Because she doesn't know how to keep a get. And the Torah says, v'shilcha mibeisa, you send her out of the home. That means it has to be a girl that understands when you're sending her out, she's out. And the Gemara says, Prat l'sheita, which excludes a retarded girl, Nebuch, that keeps coming back. She doesn't get it. You know? So sometimes you keep sending people away, they just don't get it, they just keep coming back. The Gemara says, that's somebody who is a sheita. It's mentally retarded. The Torah says, v'shilcha mibeisa, you need to send her out of the house. That means excluding somebody that doesn't understand it. So the Mishnah says, if a girl doesn't know how to accept the get, it's no good. That's exactly the Gemara now. The Mishnah though says by a get, the first opinion says her or her father. Rabbi Yehuda says only the father. So Amar Ish Lakish, Machleikus LeGedushin, Kach Machleikus LeGedushin. Just like Rabbi Yehuda and the Tana argue by Kedushin, if it's her and the father or only her, the same way is by Kedushin. That means, according to the first opinion, a night of 12 to 12 and a half, she or the father can accept her kedushin. Rabbi Yehuda says only the father. But Rabbi Yechanan Amar, Machleikus v'gedushin, no, they're only arguing by divorce. But by kedushin, divrei hakol avia v'lohi. Over there, Rabbi Yechanan says, even the chachamim would hold only the father. In other words, by divorce, clearly there's an argument. Because that's what I argue, clearly by divorce. The first opinion says her or her father. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, only her. Only the father. Comes along the Gemara and Rabbi Shlokish says, just like they're arguing by a get, the same argument is by Kedushin. Meaning, the first opinion says the father or the girl can receive her own Kedushin because she's 12. So it's either her or the father. And Rabbi Yechon says, no. By Kedushin, everybody agrees only the father could accept it. And now the Gemara is going to explain what's the logic of their argument. Okay? Amar Rabbi Yisrael b'Rab Chanina, my time, the Rabbi Yechon Alibu the Rabbanon. Why, by Kedushin, I'm sorry, what's the reason why Rabbi Yechonan says this view, okay, by Kedushin, why do they say only the father can do it? Right? By get, they say the father or her. Why by Kedushin does Rabbi Yechonah say the Chacham say only the father can accept it? He says like this. Gedushin machneses atma l'shus avia. When a girl at that age gets divorced, where is she going? Back to the father.
Yeah.
Okay? Therefore, bein hi, bein avia. Whether she can accept it or the father can accept it. Okay? I'll explain in a second. Kedushin demefkas atzme mishus avia. Kedushin, though, that removes her from the father. And I'll explain why in a second. Avia v'lahi, only he, the father can accept it and she can't. Meaning like this. When the girl is leaving the father, okay, the father has to agree to it. So therefore, only he could accept the Kedushin. Why is the girl leaving the father? She's only Kedushin, she's not married yet. Because the din is like this. When a girl makes a vow under Bas Mitzvah, it's not a vow. If a girl makes a vow, it's not a vow. 12 to 12 and a half, if a girl had Kedushin, the father and the new husband have to do it. To nullify the vow. They have to say, you know, no vow, no vow, no. Because they can, the Torah says, when a wife makes a vow, if the day the husband heard the vow, he says it's not a vow, then it's non-valid. Okay? But once a girl gets Kedushin, she already left the father a little bit. Because like this, the father does it himself, and now the father needs the husband also to do it with him.
Between 12 and
12 and a half. So what happens by Kedushin? She's leaving the father. Yeah. If she's leaving the father, they hold. Rabbi Yechonah says, only the father can get it, not her. When she's coming back to the father, then the Gemara says, either her or the father, because the father doesn't care. He's getting her back. So he doesn't care if she gets it or he gets it.
Get what?
The get. But the Kedushin, because she's leaving him, then only he has the exclusive power, because Kedushin is going to take away the daughter from him. Okay, that's what he says.
So he says to separate from the father, you need the father's
permission.
And to come back to the father, either one
is
her,
good.
Her
right. Her. Right.
Yeah, if she's unhappy, she wants to go back. She has to be able to make that decision to go back. But then fun would be unhappy.
What's that? Oh yeah? The quelling guys.
Fighting each other.
In the case, she doesn't have any right. If the husband gave a gift, who cares? The father...
Now she goes back to the father's domain.
It doesn't matter. Even the father can say, I don't want a gift. Even the gift can say, I don't want a gift. If the husband wants to give a gift, nobody can hold him back.
Yeah, but only the father has the... Yeah, but the chum hold, either her or the father can accept it.
Doesn't matter. So it's not the issue, I thought.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. The girl's going to come back. In other words, the father's rights become stronger now that the girl takes a get. Because now she comes back to it, so whatever she makes, the father owns. The vows, he has a control over. So when she's coming back to the father doesn't care if she or her gets it. But to leave the father, that you need a stronger thing. And therefore only the father can get it, according to Rabbi Yechon, and not the girl. Okay, then the Gemara asks like this. But in Maimer, there's an Maimer will explain in a second. The Mafkas Atman Shusavio, she gets out of the domain of the father, yet Utnan, yet it says like this. I'll explain this whole thing in a second. That Ktana Mina Edison and Asim Ba Maimer Elamidasavia. There's a din like this. There's a din called Yibum. Okay, Yibum is a man dies, no children. The mother has to marry the wife. Right? If he doesn't want to marry her, she has to do chalitza. To put the shoe, take off the shoe and spit in the shoe. It's a whole process. In other words, like this. If there's two brothers, one dies without kids, in the old days when you're allowed to have more than one wife, the brother would marry his sister-in-law. What happens if he didn't want to? Then they would give chalitza. The whole process is similar because the Torah binds her to him, the sister-in-law to the brother-in-law, and to undo it, you need what's called chalitza. Or he can marry her. Now, chalitza is a whole process. You wear a shoe, and the woman takes off the shoe from the brother-in-law, and she spits on the ground, and she said, "You're disgusting for not wanting to marry me," and build up the brother's home. Because nowadays everybody does chalitza. You can't do yibum today for a lot of reasons. But, you know, in the time of the Mishnah, it was common to do yibum. Okay? They would actually do yibum. Now, min ha-Torah, there's no kedushin involved by a yibum. Normally, you want to marry a woman, you have to give kedushin, right? By Yibum, there's no Kedushin. The Torah gave you the Kedushin already. God made the Kedushin. But the Chachamim came along and said, we now want to do a rabbinic Kedushin. The rabbinic Kedushin is called Ma'amar. Ma'amar means saying. Okay? Here. I'm going to read it here in the English because it just writes it very well. The Torah. A whole bunch of them up there.
We never had it like this.
I don't know. The Torah declares that when a man dies childless, is survived by one or more brothers, his widow, known as a Yavama, may not remarry anyone from the general population. Instead, a brother of the deceased must take her as a wife through cohabitation in the process known as Yibum. Okay? If he refuses Yibum, then the Torah does Chalitza. Okay, that's... Now, although by Torah law, Yibum is the only method that can affect the Yavama's marriage, the rabbis enacted a type of a rabbinic kedushin known as Maimer. That's what the Kedushin for a Yav Yibum is called Maimer. What is it? In performing Maimer, the Yavam gives the Yavama, the man gives the woman, the brother-in-law gives the sister-in-law money for the sake of Kedushin, and therefore reserves the right that he is going to marry her, none of the other brothers. None of the other brothers. Okay? Maimer does not complete the marriage. Okay? For as long as the executed Maimer does not go to perform Yibun, he is not entitled to inherit the woman, because he didn't marry her yet. Okay? Now, what happens, and this is an interesting thing, what happens if the brother-in-law did this Maimer with this woman, and then changed his mind? Chalitza is not enough, he needs to give a get also. Even though biblically, if you're not doing Yibum, you just do Chalitza. But once he does this rabbinic Kedushin, he needs a get.
Which brother is obligated to marry her? Let's say...
There's five brothers.
The five brothers, the one in the middle.
So the Mishnah says... Okay, so the Mishnah says you go to the oldest brother. Says, you want to do Yibum? If he says yes, good. If he says no, go to the next brother. You want to do Yibum? Yes or no? You go to older brothers. If they all say no,
start from the oldest.
You go down. You want to marry the girl? You give him the first no. Or he says yes. And
could they have a choice? The brothers? Okay, I want.
No, but yeah. I mean, if they're both fighting, they want it. Then the older one gets it.
Let's say one says, okay, I want it. The other ones are quiet. And even though he's not the oldest.
No, they go to the oldest first. They ask the oldest first, you know. If the oldest wants, if all the boys want her, then the oldest gets. That's the halacha. He gets the first rights. Okay? If they all say no, then Bezin goes back to the oldest brother and says, listen, guy, you're the oldest. Either marry her or do chalitza. One of the two. Once the brother did maimer, the rabbinic kedushin, then chalitza is not enough to free her. She would actually need a get.
And you said if he did the maimer and he gave her $5, that he wants to be her husband.
Right.
He wants her to be his
wife. The other brothers can't marry her.
And you said he's not really married to her yet.
Until he actually lives with her. For instance, like he says, if she dies, before he marries her, he cannot go to the cemetery for her.
Cannot.
If he's a kohen, I'm saying.
Oh, if he's a kohen.
I'm saying if he's a kohen, yeah. That's what I said. If he's a kohen, he can't. Okay, so now the Gemara says, the Gemara asks a question like this. Maimer removes her from the father's jurisdiction, right? Because it's interesting. He brings down over here from the Rishonim that before Maimer, the father can pick which brother should marry her.
The father of
the deceased. No, I'm sorry. The father of the girl can give his daughter to, if she's a kid, she's on the bas mitzvah.
Ah.
He can give it to any one of the brothers.
What if the girl is not physically able to get married and bear children?
Because that's the story. What they basically do, the Gemara says, Besdin would advise them what's better. For instance, let's say the brother that died was 25, okay? And he has a 5-year-old brother, okay? And the woman is 23, okay? They're not going to tell him marry her. First of all, he can't. He's not bar mitzvah. Get it? But Besdin, the Gemara says, would advise, you know, if it Yibum is a smart idea, sometimes it's not a good idea.
heavy foot. Okay, I don't understand. If we don't do yimum, if we don't do yibum, why are we obligated to do chalitza?
No, it's either yibum or chalitza.
I know, but nowadays we don't do yibum.
But they do chalitza. Because the Torah says, if you don't do yibum, if the guy doesn't want, then the Torah says the only way this woman is able to remarry is with chalitza. The truth is, what happens if it's a 90-year-old woman? She's not interested in remarrying. Yeah, then she doesn't have to do yibum or chalitza. But she can't marry anybody else, that's it.
Again, what's chalitza's process?
The whole process.
Just the brief parts of it is that
they put on a shoe, a special type of a shoe, and then they take off the shoe, and she spits on the ground to say, "You look, you're shaming. You don't want to build your brother's home."
The right foot, the left foot, what?
The right foot.
The right foot.
Then it's a shy. What happens? She's left-footed. If he's left-footed,
she's embarrassing.
The guy saying basically, look at you. You don't want to rebuild your brother's home.
Okay.
Because the Torah says when you do yibum, the first child should be called in the name of the brother. Because he's basically taking over the brother's dynasty. And this guy is not interested in doing it.
I guess one of the reasons we don't do it now is because nowadays nobody is so holy.
Fishing can marry two wives.
Yeah, even if he's not married.
No, first of all, let me tell you something. You can, if let's say two brothers are married, right? And each one of them have kids, right?
Right.
And one brother dies. You can't marry your sister-in-law. It's adultery. The only thing, if there's no kids, then the Torah says you have a mitzvah. But if there's kids, even if, let's say, two brothers marry girls, yeah? And one brother dies. Okay? And then the other brother's wife dies. He can't marry his sister-in-law. It's adultery, even if they're kids. You can't marry your sister-in-law, even if your brother's not around.
No, I'm saying the old
it's a relative.
In the old days, they did it for the mitzvah. Now they do it for lust. So
that's one of the reasons why also Yibum Echelitza is recommended. But that's not the point. The point is, yeah, you can't have two wives. I'm just saying that normally you just can't marry a sister-in-law.
Why did they do this chalitza first?
Torah says.
12 boys.
Oh, because the person's brother passed away without kids, and then you need to do chalitza.
So they still follow the rule.
Yeah. It's not very, very common. But, no, but the din still applies.
If the father didn't say do you won't, it would be harder for the woman to get married in the community. Why we do this for her?